ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This will had come about in the most suspicious circumstances you could possibly imagine.
Who gets what when someone dies, and who decides?
The difficulty with undue influence often is proving it.
Join me, Damien Carrick, for the Law Report special series on wills, Over My Dead Body.
The person felt like they had no option. It's difficult to prove that.
To hear, search for The Law Report and look out for Over My Dead Body. Find it on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
How much would you give up for love? Your home? Your best friend? Your life? Hello, Hilary Harper with you in Rewind with another episode in the series Saga Land, where ABC Conversations host and author Richard Feidler, along with his dear friend, the writer Kari Gislason, take us to Iceland to explore the ancient Icelandic Viking sagas, tales of love, war and humanity. Today it's the story of Gudrun, the most beautiful woman in Iceland, and the two men who loved her. Kari and Richard also continue to try and piece together the mysterious and tantalising threads of Kari's family history. Here's Richard and the story of Gudrun.
My friend Kari is a Viking. Last year he said he was going to Iceland. I said I was going with him. Kari Gislason is a writer and an academic. He was born here in Iceland, and he's still crazy about the place.
There's a sort of a tragedy to it, or a sadness to the Icelandic love of home. And I have that. I'll borrow a line from W.H. Auden. I'm never not thinking of Iceland.
Iceland was uninhabited for countless centuries until it was settled by the Vikings in the Middle Ages. We know so much about the lives of those people because their stories were recorded in the sagas of Iceland. Kari loves the sagas. He feels a real connection through them to his ancient Viking ancestors, people whose lives are at once so familiar to us and yet so strange. But we're also here because of another possible connection to the sagas, through Kari's bloodline. Kari only ever met his Icelandic father four times in his life. But at their last meeting, he told Kari something that just floored him.
He said to me, "Kari, what are you doing with your life?" I said, "Well, I'd like to be a writer." He said, "Ah, that makes sense. You know you're related to Snorri Sturluson, don't you?"
If that's true, then Kari's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather is the greatest of the saga authors. And that's an idea that's very alluring to Kari, and a little terrifying too, for reasons that'll become clear later on. Kari and I are on our way to a farm called Logar, which is north of Reykjavik. It's the site of one of the most famous of the saga tales, the story of Gudrun. We've come into the west coast of Iceland, which I expected to be kind of hard and brutal and frosty. But in fact, it's actually kind of pleasant, Kari. Really beautiful green, rolling hills, rolling down into the water.
Oh, and when the sun comes out like this, there's a line, you know, Solin var hjá mér, eins og grannvaxin kona og gullum skóm. It means the sun was beside me, like a thin girl in yellow shoes.
It's close to midnight, and we've just come out here to the edge of a small, dark forest. It's very still tonight, and there are a few stars, and the forest smells of wet earth. We're here to tell the story of a Viking woman called Gudrun, who lived in this area. Mm. What do we need to know about Gudrun before we start, Kari?
Yeah, well, this is a woman's story, and a story about a woman who loses really everything, and that her answer to that loss is to bring the whole show down. There was a man called Ósvífur. He was the son of Helgi, son of Ok, son of Bjarni, son of Ketil, the son of Bjarni. Ósvífur's mother was called Nýðbjörg, her mother Katlín, the daughter of Gungur, son of Uxnathor. His wife was called Þórdís, daughter of Þjóðólfur. Their daughter was called Guðrún. I want to tell you the story of Guðrún, and I want you to love Guðrún, despite everything she did wrong. She was a pretty girl, we know that. She had beautiful manners and she cared about them. But she started to have these dreams. In one, she was wearing a lovely bonnet, but it didn't suit her. She didn't like it. And she tossed it off and threw it in the water. In the next one, she was wearing a silver ring that she liked very much, but it slipped off and fell into a lake. In the next one, she was wearing a gold ring, which she thought must be even more valuable than the silver, but turned out not to be so. And she hit it against a stone, and it split open and spilled blood. And in the last dream, she was wearing a very heavy helmet covered in jewels, and it was too heavy for her and toppled off into the sea. And these dreams troubled her. A friend of her father's was visiting the farm. His name was Gest, and he was known for being able to read such dreams. He said, Guðrún, your first dream about the bonnet was about your first husband, who you won't like and who you'll divorce. Your second dream is about your second husband, a silver ring, who you'll love but who you'll lose to drowning. Your third dream, the gold ring, is about your third husband, who won't seem as fine as that metal is precious. And when it split open and spilt blood, that was a sign that he'll be murdered. And your last dream was about a man, a great chieftain, the heavy helmet, who you will love, but who you will also lose when he drowns in the sea. Guðrún, those are your four marriages. She flushed red, but thanked him for the interpretation. As he said, her first husband was a man she didn't love and divorced. Her second husband was a man she did adore, but lost in a drowning. And so time passed on. And Guðrún had no choice but to wait for the arrival of the third husband. Not far from where we're sitting here at Laugard is a river called Laxá. Just near that river there was a farm, and two handsome, promising young men lived on that farm, and their names were Kjartan and his foster brother, Botli. They loved swimming in the river, and one day, Gest, the man who'd interpreted Guðrún's dreams, actually, was riding past that farm, and he saw the boys coming out of the water. They were still wet, and they were getting changed. Gest was traveling with his son, and when his son looked at his father, he noticed that he was crying. There were tears streaming down his face. And of course he asked his father, what's wrong? Why are you crying? And he said, oh, I shouldn't say anything about this. But it pains me to see such fine young men and to know that one day one of them will kill the other. And in so doing, will bring about his own death. The foster brothers loved coming here to Laugard. Guðrún lived here, after all, and it was probably worth the trip up the coastline to see Guðrún swimming in the hot streams at Laugard. Kjartan and Guðrún spent more and more time together. And Botli was always there as well, actually. And eventually, Guðrún and Kjartan fell completely in love. And it was obvious to everyone around here that they were perfectly suited, both beautiful young people and also so refined in their manners. But Kjartan wanted to travel first, He wasn't ready to marry, and he told Gudrun that he wanted to go abroad to Norway with his foster brother, Botli. And Gudrun said, well, can't I come? Kjartan said, no, but please wait for me. I'll be back in 3 years. I just need you to wait 3 years. And she said, you can't ask me to wait. And they left things at that. He went to Norway, and he was successful there. And he even attracted the attention of a princess, the king's sister, no less. But still, he was intending to come back in 3 years.
But could he keep his promise?
No. He couldn't in the end. He was held back in Norway. His foster brother, Botli, got away on time. And he got back to Iceland in 3 years. And he rode straight to Laugar, here, to visit Gudrun. He said that Kjartan was doing really well at court and was enjoying incredible success. And Gudrun replied, well, you know, that's to be expected. Then he said he didn't think it very likely that he was going to ever come back to Iceland. But then he also added that Kjartan had fallen in love with the king's sister.
Huh. So Botli lies to Gudrun. What does Gudrun say when she hears that?
She pretends to be pleased for him. Botli then offers his hand in marriage to Gudrun. And she says, I'll never marry another man as long as Kjartan's alive. But Botli keeps pressing, keeps telling her that Kjartan's not coming back. And eventually, she gives in and she marries Botli. And they say there wasn't that much love on Gudrun's side of that marriage. The gold ring wasn't as precious as she'd thought it might be. Kjartan, of course, didn't know any of this. He was still in Norway. But he still meant to come back, and eventually he was able to get away. The king's sister walked with him to the ship, and then she took out something to give to him, a present. But it was for Gudrun. It was a beautiful headdress. She said, give this to the woman who's waiting for you in Iceland. And so Kjartan left Norway and sailed to the west coast of Iceland, to here, where the ship was moored and where everybody came down to greet him. And he asks one of his visitors, what's the news? And it's not good news. He's told that his best friend, Botli, has married Gudrun. He's too late. One of the people visiting the ship is a young woman. Her name is Hrepna. And she's looking through Kjartan's things that he's brought back. And Kjartan is watching her. She doesn't know this, but he's watching her try things on. And then he sees her put on the headdress that was given to him for Gudrun. He walks in and says to Hrepna, the headdress suits you. I think I would like it and the girl who's wearing it. And he marries another woman. Kjartan is able to fall in love eventually with the girl who tried on the headdress. But, of course, there's still something between he and Gudrun. Botli and Gudrun visit Kjartan. And Gudrun asks Hrepna, his wife, if she can look at the headdress, which she calls the most valuable treasure ever to come to Iceland. And Hrepna shows it to her. And then later she's walking past Kjartan's room, actually, and Gudrun stops and watches him dress and overhears a conversation. Someone yells to Kjartan, asking for instructions about the seating arrangements. And he asks, would you like Gudrun to have the high seat as normal? And Kjartan yells back, no. From now on, Hrefna, my wife, is to always have the high seat in this house. Poor Gudrun, she hears this. And so when it's time for Kjartan and his wife to visit Gudrun's farm here at Laugar, she asks again to see the headdress, you know. And they put it away in a storeroom where all the women's things are kept. And the next day, Hrefna goes to get the headdress and it's gone. It's disappeared. It's been stolen. Kjartan is furious and he demands to know who the thief is. Gudrun gives her answer to that. She says, whoever stole that headdress deserved to have it. And this is where it gets nasty, because Kjartan comes back here with a bunch of men and they lock the doors of Gudrun's farm and locked Gudrun and her brothers and her family and the servants, all of them inside the farm for 3 days. He humiliated Gudrun and made them stew in their own filth for 3 days. When he went back to the farm, there was a conversation between him and his wife. She said, I hear you had a long conversation with Gudrun. Did you get a chance to see her wearing the headdress? Kjartan said, no. But you can be sure that if I had seen her wear that headdress, there would be no more beautiful woman in Iceland than her. But Gudrun demands action. She wants Botli to kill Kjartan. One day they hear that Kjartan is riding by, and she says to Botli, it seems that Kjartan can ride wherever he wants because nobody here dares to stand up to him, no matter how much he insults us. And that's it. Botli and Gudrun's kinsmen set off to ambush Kjartan. It's not far from here, Svínadalur, Pig Valley. Botli came riding over this ridge here from the north and met Kjartan riding up from the south. Botli's companions began their attack and Kjartan defended himself well with a spear, and then he took out a sword. It wasn't a good one and it kept bending while he was defending himself, and he had to keep stopping to straighten it with his foot. But all the same, he kept them back. He could see Botli standing there watching. And eventually he said to him, what's wrong, Botli? Why won't you attack? And his foster brother ignored him. Botli's companions said, how can you stand there and watch us getting beaten by Kjartan? Why did you come out if you weren't going to attack him? And so Botli drew his sword. It was called Leg Biter. And he stepped up to Kjartan. As soon as Kjartan saw the sword in his foster brother's hand, he dropped to his knees and said, what you're about to do is a terrible thing, but I would rather you killed me than put up a defense against you. And Botli stabbed him. Kjartan fell and Botli caught him. And Kjartan died in Botli's arms. Botli went back to the farm and told Gudrun what he'd done. She said she was pleased with the news. But Botley had signed his own death warrant. And not long afterwards, Kjartan's kinsmen came after him. The attackers killed Botley, and then they walked down to the stream to find Gudrun. One of them, Helgi, stepped up to Gudrun and told her what they'd done. Gudrun was pregnant by now with Botli's child, and she was wearing a blue and white sash over her tummy. Helgi walked up to it and took out his sword, still covered in Botli's blood, and smeared it across the sash. Helgi's companion said, "That's an awful, disgusting thing to do." But Helgi said, "Don't worry. One day the boy inside Gudrun's belly will be my killer." And she did give birth to a boy, and she named him Botli, after his father. And that boy grew up to be a man who one day killed Helgi. Gudrun did marry a fourth time to a man she cared about, a chieftain. But as predicted, he too died, drowned in the sea just near us. That was the heavy helmet she'd seen in that fourth dream that fell off her and toppled into the sea.
Huh. So that was her four husbands?
Yeah, and she ended up living on her own after that, in some sorrow and in grief. She became Iceland's first nun. Her son, Botli, visited her often, of course. And one day he asked her a question. He said, "Mother, which of your four husbands did you love the most?" And she said, "Þeim var ég vest, er ég unni mest." I was worst to the one I loved the most.
I was worst to the one I loved the most. She's talking about Kjartan, isn't she?
Or Botli.
How could that be Botli?
You know, I think it's Kjartan. She loved him the most. But was she the worst to him? It's a two-sided equation.
It seems to me, Kari, when we talk about the saga stories after you've told them, we're always talking about the women. We're always talking about what they do and what they think and why they do what they do.
They have to come at things without swords. Words are their weapons. And if you rely on words to make things change, there's a chance you'll say something more interesting.
I was worst to the one I loved the most. What a terrible thing to have to admit at the end of your life.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, you ask me, why do I love Gudrun? Maybe it is for that tender moment when we see the crack in all that anger and really just the wound of love.
One of the reasons why the saga characters are very real to modern-day Icelanders is because most people here can trace their roots all the way back to the Viking Age. People here can literally go to a database and look up their Viking ancestors. But Kari has never been able to do that, and this is where we get to his complicated family story. Kari was born here in Iceland, but his mother didn't put down his father's name on the birth certificate because his father already had a wife and five kids. But when Kari was 27, he thought it was time to live in truth about all this. So he wrote a letter to his siblings.
And they responded beautifully, and they welcomed me into the family. My sisters, bless them, organized for he and I to sit down and have a chat. And he said to me, "You know you're related to Snorri Sturluson, don't you?"
Snorri's like the Shakespeare of Iceland. He's the author of some of the greatest of the sagas. And he died in the year 1241.
But Kari's never been able to confirm the truth of what his father told him before he died.
Somebody telling us.
So when we got back to Reykjavik, we got in touch with Kari's half-sister, Bryndis. And Bryndis had been close to their father. She'd grown up with him. So we invited her over to our apartment. We had a cup of tea. And Kari asked her what she knew about the family connection to Snorri.
It had to come through in the family tree somewhere. And it came through with you. And that's beautiful. He was proud of having you as a son, but he was never able to show it. You know, it was a difficult situation. You know, in those times, you did not divorce a woman with five children. That was just losing your face in society.
Yeah.
But I think he loved all his children.
Yeah.
And he regretted all his life, I think, having taken that position in his life of refusing you, because that's what he did, you know.
It's lovely to hear, you know, you talk about this, and I realize over the years we haven't really talked that much about it, have we, you know?
No, we haven't. I think we all grow up, you know, we all grow up and we kind of learn how to look at things differently through different eyes. And I don't want to be angry with anybody anymore, not even my father. I mean, he tried his best.
That's how I feel as well. Yeah. When we met that day, I sort of felt that he was giving me something when he said, you know, you're descended from Snorri.
Yeah, he was.
I felt like it was a gift. Do you care whether you're descended from Snorri? Have you thought about it that way?
I mean, it's good for the ego.
Yeah.
I mean, he was kind of the biggest man in Iceland.
Yeah, the way we've been talking about it together, Richard and I, is like, it sort of means nothing.
No, exactly.
But it also means everything. You know, it's one of those ones that it's a bit of both, isn't it?
It is.
Next time on Sagaland, Kari and I go right out to the remote northwest fjords of Iceland to find the classic saga of Gisli, the Viking fugitive. And we go to the offices of Íslendingabók to see if there's some way, any way, they can help us to find out whether Kari's father had told him the truth, and to see if there is a connection between Kari and the greatest of the saga authors.
And as Richard said, next time they'll tell the tale of Gisli in the windswept landscape where the Viking went into exile. It's a story about the complexity of family life and the difficult choices that come with it. Sagaland is produced by Richard Feidler and Kari Gislason, with sound engineer Steve Fieldhouse. And Richard also composed the beautiful music that you hear throughout the series. This has been Rewind, a Radio National production.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.